University of Colorado.
Welcome to CU On the Air, the University of Colorado's podcast. We feature faculty from across CU's four campuses and their interesting, innovative, and sometimes life-changing work.
I'm arguing, along with a couple of other scholars, that we should push domestication back in history further than we think it was. A lot of scholars think it probably came around 5,000, 4,000 BCE. I think it was probably earlier than that. But I also think beer production coincides with it. And I'm arguing basically right around 8,500 BCE is potentially when the first beer was made. And what I think is so interesting about beer is it's always been a social thing. You look at ancient Egypt, and we see scenes of literally dozens of people around a vessel with reeded straws down in it, and they're all sucking out of those straws. And it's just like this really cool social thing.
It would seem that being a brewer yourself gives you a particular insight into that process, obviously. How has that process changed over the times that you've researched, and how has it stayed the same?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. Actually, never been asked that question in all these years, so that's a great point to bring up. When you look at it, when it comes to the process, things have the general concepts of it haven't really changed that much. I mean, beer has four ingredients in it now, but in antiquity it just had to have three, and those three were water, malted grains, and yeast. Hops come in way later. Now hops are considered almost mandated as a component of beer. But those general processes were there, but how they process it was different. I mean, you go back to far, far antiquity, ancient Near East, Egypt, Greece, those areas, it was done in clay, primarily fermentation in clay amphorae in the Greek world or, in the Egyptian context. Eventually, that probably transitioned into a Roman context as well, but the Romans also used barrels. We do know they used wooden barrels to transport a lot of goods. And found a lot of evidence for that also, at Vindolanda in the UK, where we have these huge barrels. I can't even imagine how they were using them to transport beer and wine and things. But for a long period of time, really up until the 20th century, the vast majority of beer was produced in oak. All fermentation was done in wooden vats or vessels. How it's changed drastically now, and this has been a big challenge for the Ales of Antiquity series, is that everything's done in steel, everything's stainless steel at breweries, everything's very controlled, and everything's very automated. And one of the biggest challenges I've had with the Ales of Antiquity is actually, in fact, recreating these beers according to the process they did them, because what we've found is that modern equipment does not like these ancient recipes.
Interesting.
Because a lot of the equipment does not want to work with anything but the standard malt, water, hops, yeast, in the sense of the Germanic use of those things, because a lot of equipment that is made by the Germans, and the Rhein-Heizgebot that was passed in the 16th century that says all those things were in there, they became really good at making beer, and they started making the best equipment in the world. So we all have German equipment in facilities of our scale. But that creates a lot of challenges. You would think it's like, oh, wow, they were making that beer back in the day in a very simple way, but the most simplest of ways cannot be replicated in the most complicated of industries, or in the most complicated facets of equipment that are cobbed together and pieced together to do a very, very specific thing.
Yeah.
And that's been a really interesting challenge, really has.
So do you have some clay pots in the back that you mess around with, some oak barrels?
The clay pots part is coming, let's put it that way. Oak barrels, definitely. George Washington was the first beer we've ever done at Avery that was fermented 100% in oak. I tried to get it literally right down to the most minute details of how he was actually getting his barrels, what they were made of, how they were procured, dimensions, all that kind of stuff. And then we produce the beer in those to that degree. But yeah, I want to do clay here soon, to be honest, for an upcoming project for sure.
How has the Ales of Antiquities been received?
Really quite well. I mean, Ales of Antiquity is responsible for allowing me to go all over the world and all over the place to do these things. We just have a natural curiosity. And I think also in Colorado in particular, we really care about where our food comes from, and we really want to know about the history of our food and why it's produced the way it is. That has allowed Ales of Antiquity to be extremely well received and preserved for me. And it's extended way abroad from where I thought it would. I already talked about the monks, but even I got asked to go to Stockholm last year to give a whole series of talks on Ales of Antiquity in Sweden for the Whiskey and Beer Festival. I know, oh darn, I had to go to the Whiskey and Beer Festival in Stockholm.
Again, with the brutal research.
I know, it's just rough. But it was really cool from them even. All of these Swedes coming out of the woodwork paying pretty good money to listen to me talk about Ales of Antiquity and barrel aging and all that kind of stuff. And the book I'm writing right now on ancient beer, I'm arguing along with a couple of other scholars that we should push domestication back in history further than we think it was. A lot of scholars think it probably came around 5,000, 4,000 BCE. I think it was probably earlier than that. But I also think beer production coincides with it. And I'm arguing basically right around 8,500 BCE is potentially when the first beer was made, which means that it's been around for us for over 10,000 years. People worldwide are affected by beer or alcohol, even if they choose not to drink, because that is literally a decision you have to make because it is a part of our culture. And also what's just really cool about it is I think the reason I get asked to go so many places, do these talks and do these kind of presentations, is beer is something that's, it's so social, right? I mean, it's something that brings people together. I was asked to talk for the CU Alumni Association for a homecoming, I think it was 2 years ago. A gentleman came up to me afterwards and he's like, can you explain to me why it is that when I go out to a bar with friends or I meet up with family at a place that has beer and I always order beer in that setting. It'll be a group of like 10, 12 people. We sit down, I get a beer. But at home at night, I just want to pour scotch, I want a quiet place, watch the news, read the paper, whatever it might be, and just settle down. And I tell him, I'm like, that's a really interesting point because I think about myself, and of course beer is my life, but I drink more wine and spirits at home than I do beer. But that's my quiet space. You know, I have my nightcap, you know, and I'll have a scotch. I love scotch, you know, or I'll drink wine. But when I'm out in settings, all I do is drink beer. And what I think is so interesting about beer is it's always been a social thing. You look at ancient Egypt, and we see scenes of literally dozens of people around a vessel with reeded straws down in it, and they're all sucking out of those straws. And it's just like this really cool social thing. And I think to come all the way back to your question originally, that's why I think Ales of Antiquity is so successful right now, because it's always been social and it's bringing back us all back into that social arena and trying to learn and figure out why it is that beer's been around for so long.
Yeah, well, it's interesting what you mentioned. We tend to think of history as the big events and the notable people, but we sometimes lose sight of people's everyday lives.
Absolutely. Again, to go back to Egypt, I mean, lots and lots of references to beer production in small communities. Then in 2017, they unearthed what's been deemed the tomb of the brewer that was found in the Valley of the Kings. And it was a brewer by the name of Khonsu Imheb. It's actually what we named our Egyptian beer after. And what was so cool about that, it was a tomb, a royal tomb, that was affiliated with Amenhotep III, who was actually, arguably, I should say, the grandfather of King Tut. And he literally allowed his chief brewer to be buried in the royal cemetery because it was that important to them. And so you see both sides of it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's the most common of man or the most elite of man, it does affect them in some way.
So how many of the Ales of Antiquity do you have on tap here at any one time?
Right now, we try to keep one on all the time. Sometimes we've had upwards of two or three. When we do special events, like when we release George Washington Porter, we have 5 different Ales of Antiquity on for that. But the goal is for me to continue to put 3 of these out a year. And so we should always have one on, basically, is the idea.
When I heard you talk previously, I was struck by some of the things you've touched on today, which is the monks in central Italy or the folks in Stockholm. You've really gotten a notoriety around this. Has it surprised you?
Yes, very much so. It's been a very kind of humbling experience, to be honest, because I just never expected the Ales of Antiquity program to ever turn into what it is. But also it's been really interesting to kind of land and turn into the guy that's the quote beer archaeologist, as they call me, you know. And I love that title. It's very flattering, and I think it's just really I just didn't expect kind of the inquiries I get. The upcoming project is with Global Explorer, which is a division of University of Alabama, who works very, very closely with NOVA and National Geographic. Honestly, you went back 7 years ago when I started working at Avery. I would have never in my wildest dreams ever imagined I'd be doing this. I never even thought I would have been making ancient beer. Go back 3 years ago to when I started this program, never would have guessed that I'd be being asked to literally fly all over the world to work on these projects. And with Global Explorer, we're going to India, Kazakhstan, Cambodia, and Uruguay for upcoming Ales of Antiquity. And so literally getting to see all of these things, but it's kind of cool that they know that I'm willing to try anything, but I won't force it either.
And you've traveled the world, but you've also been close to home plenty. You did some work recently with the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Do a lot of stuff locally. I just have a wonderful partnership with Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Several years ago, I was contacted by them to consult on the Mayan exhibit when it came through. And they had got wind that I was doing research on this. And so I came in and worked with Nicole Gurnow there a little bit on that project. And then shortly after I released Nestor's Cup, the first in the series, I got contacted by them within weeks. And they said, hey, you know, we would really love if you'd be willing to do some projects for our traveling exhibits, because we know a lot of these cultures coming in have beer. You know that as well. Let's dive in. And so working with Denver Museum of Nature and Science has been great. We did two beers for the mummy exhibit when it came through, the Egyptian beer, and then also we did a Peruvian chicha for that exhibit. The Viking beer came from a collaboration with DM&S. And then we also did Beersheba, which was when they asked me if I could find any research or evidence for beer production in the Bible. Boy, was that a journey. And in the Dead Sea Scrolls in particular, and that was the one that was right before this. Beersheba was the one we did before George Washington. What a cool project. Got to work with some really cool people on that too. And so working with them has been phenomenal. I've ended up working with people that I never thought I would. Like we have a partnership with the Colorado Ballet now, if you can believe it.
And how I don't know if I can.
I know, I couldn't either. When they contacted me, they wanted me to come give a presentation on Ales of Antiquity at the ballet. And I'm like, how's this going to work? And they were joking that they were going to make me dance and all that stuff. I'm like, sure, whatever. I'll do whatever you want. Yeah, exactly. But what they wanted to do was they do these events at the ballet where they try to bring in people from a lot of different trades. They call them crafts. You know, they call it the craft of dancing. And like we sit down on a stage after we've seen a performance and we're interviewed by a comedian, which is always fun, but there'll be like the director of the symphony and myself and a couple of dancers and maybe a director of a play or something at the, you know, Denver Center for Performing Arts. And it went so well that we work with them regularly. I do several events a year with them. It's just been really fun to latch on to some of these partnerships. And with DM&S, I love that they're so close and so local and so at home, because they'll you know, give me a little heads up that this really cool project's coming in. I owe a lot to them because they're the ones that made me get outside of my comfort zone, because I was just thinking Greek, Roman, Egyptian, I'll do stuff in the world I live. They're like, no, you're a brewer. So you should be able to find these beer things no matter where you go. And they're actually, it was really cool. Them and my wife said the same thing to me. She's like, just because you're a classicist doesn't mean you can't research beer. Beer right. is your other specialization.
Sounds like so, your wife has a lifetime I told you so card for encouraging you to do
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. She 100% does. She can hold that over me forever. Yeah. And it's been really, really cool. Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting you were telling us before we started recording was you've given some educational talks to other brewers around the area, and there's obviously a vibrant brewing scene in Colorado. It's interesting that they're looking into the history of it and have this community that goes beyond the actual brewing.
Yeah, I've given some talks in Denver, some in Golden as well. Call to Arms Brewing down in Denver, which if people haven't been there, I highly, highly recommend it. They were voted one of the best breweries in Colorado, the best brewery actually in Colorado a couple years ago. Good friends of ours, and they brought me in to do these kind of public seminars. And this industry's gone through a lot in the last 7 years. That, you know, you go back like 5 or 6 years ago and you would still have the people that might walk into a brewery and be like, I just want a red ale. Well, that doesn't really mean anything. You know, that's just a color. It's not going to give you any flavor. Or I don't like IPAs, but then we would give them our beer, Hog Heaven, which is an Imperial Red IPA, but people would see it and they thought it was sweet and a barley wine. Like, oh, I love this. And it's one of our hoppiest beers. And so that era has completely passed to the point where people know exactly what they like. They know exactly what they want to drink. The people that are really curious about new innovative styles know what they want to latch onto. At the same time, maybe last fall, I did a project with now presidential running candidate Hickenlooper and Charlie,
former brewer.
Yep, former brewer. So down at the Wine Cube, did the did a project with Hickenlooper. Dave Thomas, who's been in Colorado for a long time, brewing and working at various breweries, as well as Charlie Papazian, who started the Brewers Association. And the Homebrewers Association as well. And all of those guys, we got together, and Hickenlooper is kind of the star, obviously, of the show, but we also had Charlie. I mean, Charlie's a huge name in beer. And they asked me to come in and work with them on this thing about beer history in Colorado. And, you know, I'm so used to doing really old, old stuff. But with those guys, with Hickenlooper, Dave Thomas, Charlie Papazian, myself, even the head historian from Coors. And there are some really fun anecdotes, and I get asked a lot about Coors because what was really funny, if people want to watch it, you can watch it online. It was called The Colorado Experience, Cheers to Beer. It's a 30-minute episode that we did together. And you can find it on YouTube or PBS, I think, streaming. Interviewed me for probably 2.5 hours for that documentary. What they chose to have me do was the history of Coors. And they're like, we've got this guy from Avery that's doing the history of Coors. It was so ironic. People ask me why I'm interested in that. And I said, well, Coors is Colorado beer history. I mean, that's where it really starts and begins. And there are some wonderful stories that revolve around that, you know. And
everyone has a Coors in the trunk story.
You're darn right. Yeah, I've heard so many of those. It's great. One of a guy I used to work with was a business sales rep for Apple before I came to Avery, and my partner there, he said he was quite a bit older than I was, and he said back in the day he was from Kansas, and he's like, yeah, I would drive into Colorado once a month, load up a trailer with Coors Banquet, and drive it back across the border, sell it for $1 more a case, make a killing off of it, you know. So, but yeah, that history is fun, you know. That's that tangible history, yeah.
Well, speaking of history, I think we've just been served up some of the George Washington Porter, which is quite tasty. I tell you, the things I do for this podcast. But. So it's been really interesting to hear about your journey, and it seems like also you're by no means finished with it. Where do you see things going in the future for you?
Right now, the next project is actually going to be in India. So our next Ale of Antiquity that will be released in June or July, most likely June. The first project I'm working on with Global Explorer out of the University of Alabama. And what I'm looking into is actually trying to figure out where the India Pale Ale came from in the first place. So we will make the original India Pale Ale. There's a lot of theories and a lot of material that's been published, but nobody seems to be very certain about where this comes from. Friend of mine and colleague in the field, Mitch Steele, wrote a book on IPAs several years ago, and he talks a little about it, but he said it's just so weird, it's so opaque, the history. So hopefully I can dig in a little bit more in my travels and figure out a little bit more about you know, the East India Trading Company and things of that nature to figure it out. So that'll be the next one. After that, it's going to be split. I actually, when I was in Stockholm, I also started on another venture while I was out there on the Vasa. If you're familiar, the Vasa Museum is absolutely incredible, but the Vasa was a ship that sunk on its maiden voyage. It's a very somber story. It's sad, but at the same time, somewhat comical, to be honest, because on its maiden voyage, made about 300 yards out to sea and then sank. And they had spent several years, if I recall, I think it was 12 years, trying to build this ship, and it sank right away. But when it went down, it did preserve essentially everything that was on it. It laid at the bottom of the channel there for 333 years. It was probably the 1960s. And when they brought it up, because of the nature of the water in that channel, stuff doesn't deteriorate. The microbial activity is really, really low. And so it's almost, it's like 95 or 98% intact in the museum and original. But they found over 100 barrels of beer on board. So looking at doing one of those, working with them as well to maybe track down if they were able to isolate the yeast that was in those barrels. So that's coming up. Talked a little bit about the Roman military camp beer as well in the UK. Researching Roman military camps all along the northern border, and I'd be really curious to find out if they were producing different beers, say in Regensburg, Germany versus in Vindolanda, England. That's coming down the pipe, but also with George Washington that we're sipping on right now, what's actually really fun about this project, and after I did the GW beer, I told the marketing team at Avery, I said, after 2.5 years of researching beer in colonial America, we should make just like an offshoot, like a presidential, a presidential series of the Ales of Antiquity, and they loved it, and so next President's Day, Thomas Jefferson's beer will be coming out. There is even more material on Thomas Jefferson's brewing than there is George Washington. I spent a lot of time at Monticello over the last year or so as well. And so that'll be coming, but also other founding fathers also. I found beer evidence where they didn't even know it existed, which has been a lot of fun working with them as well. And so that's going to be ongoing. Maybe Obama will come out and brew a beer with me someday for this series. It'd be really cool.
He's been known to drink one.
Yes, he likes them. So, and that's why I like it. It's going to be ongoing, to be honest, because some of the crazier ideas that have come up, I mean, I want to get even more experimental with this and really look at cultures, but also really rely on science. I mean, at the University of Colorado, we have wonderful, wonderful abilities and awards and everything that we've won for our capabilities in science. And Dean White actually and I presented at an alumni event a couple years ago, and he talked about how he does all this work on ice core sampling. And I think that'd be really curious and interesting to find out too. What's the oldest Saccharomyces strain that we can get out of an ice core that can actually ferment beer? Interesting things just to learn, yeah. More about it. And so the sky is the limit at this point. It's going to be a long, long ongoing process, which is not a bad problem to have.
No
maybe
kidding.
Job security.
We're enjoying this George Washington Porter, but quite tasty. Do you have a favorite among all the beers you brew?
I mean, they're kind of like children to me, when I come up with these ideas, I guess. But I would say so far of the Ales of Antiquity, George Washington is by far my favorite. I think one of the reasons why is that it is so, it's so recent, it's so new to me. I mean, only being about 225 years old, that beer era does still affect what we drink and what we produce. And so there are notes and tones in this beer, I feel like, that come through. So I like the fact that it's sessionable, you might say. I love dark beer, especially this time of year, so I think dropping it in February for release was perfect because I've been drinking a lot of dark beer. Beyond this one, Beersheba, the ancient Israeli, Palestinian, Jordanian beer that we did, was probably my favorite for a couple of reasons. That's one where I actually got to crack a linguistics code, I think, in making the beer for the first time. And also it was just it had pomegranate juice in it, so it was just really light and refreshing. It was also released in summertime, so it was kind of a nice drinkable beer. References to it also, which are kind of interesting and entertaining, is there are references to pomegranate beer being produced in the Akkadian Empire about 1,000 years earlier from this guy, this king by the name of Zimri Lim. And Zimri Lim, 1750 BCE, would force his slaves to go up a mountain every day to collect, or at least monthly, to collect snow because he wanted his beer cold. And he put pomegranate juice in that beer.
I can understand
as well.
That.
Yeah, darn right. So so those have probably been my favorite. The thing is, I think there's just such a fun story behind every single one of them so far. I mean, the monastic beers will always, that's going to be a hard one for me to beat right now, because getting to, become really good friends with and live with monks is it's a really cool experience, and that tangibility of the history It's there.
What's been the reaction among your colleagues in the department about your work and about the attention it's getting?
I think it's been really great. I mean, they promote what I do really, really well. They support my research really, really well. One thing that just kind of floored me a couple of years ago is, again, I'm a lecturer. I'm not a tenured faculty. There's no reason that I should be given research grants, yet the department has given me research grants the last 2 years to continue my research, and the university wants to see me continue my research and publish on the topic. And so it's just been amazing, to be honest. I can't speak highly enough, and the people who are most inspirational to me in that department were certainly Diane Collin and Elspeth Dusenberry. They were the professors I came out here to work with. And if there's one thing I'll never forget, I mean, Diane Conlin, probably more than anybody, instilled it in me, was you got to think outside of the box in this field, because let's think about it. Classics been around for 2,000 years, right? And it's not like things have changed all that much since those civilizations died off. But you got to figure out new ways to approach history. Instead of just exploring literature all the time, get in there, you know, and dig into the dirt and get your hands dirty, figuring out exactly what it was that they were doing. And that's been probably one of the coolest parts of this program, watching Avery come together with the University of Colorado to continue something that's probably, I hope, well beyond my years, will continue to change the way we approach history from that era.
Well, Travis Rupp, thank you so much for a fascinating journey today, and thanks to Avery Brewing Company for hosting us, and thanks for the refreshments you provided us as well.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure, Ken. Thank you very much for having me on.
The University of Colorado comprises four campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu. Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold. I'm Ken McConnellog, and we'll see you on the air next month.
University of Colorado.